and welcome to the Brand Strategy Podcast, a show created to equip you with the inspiration, encouragement, and clarity you need to build the brand of your dreams. I'm your host, Bonnie Bakhtiari, brand designer, strategist, and founder of The Illume Retreat. From sustainable strategy to heartfelt encouragement, each episode is designed to equip you with the tools you need to chase after your dreams. Because you deserve a brand that empowers you to do what you love, connects with your dream clients, and offers a deep sense of fulfillment along the way. So grab a cup of coffee and join me on this journey, won't you? Friends, welcome back to the Brand Strategy Podcast. This week, I'm really excited to welcome you to another one of our special series on mental health and business therapy for the entrepreneur. And today I'm chatting with Josh Berger, licensed counselor and my big brother, about how we can navigate rejection and diffuse negative self-talk as entrepreneurs. This is something that I know we've all had a lot of personal experience with, and it is a conversation that I believe we need to start to dive into in order to better learn how we can handle rejection when it inevitably comes our way, and also how we can start to turn down the volume on those negative self-talk loops that can show up in our minds, because I really think that we deserve better. We don't need to be telling those things to ourselves and believing those lies and insecurities that we are really focusing on. So Josh, welcome back. It's so great to get a chat with you, and I'm excited to be diving into this conversation with you today.
Thanks, Bonnie. I think it's going to be great.
Me too. Well, let's just dive on in. I think that, like I was saying, rejection, negative self-talk, like all things that we encounter as humans, it's not an issue that's unique to entrepreneurs. Of course, I feel like the nature of entrepreneurship, there's a lot of vulnerability that goes into that. Like, we are pursuing ideas we're passionate about or skills that we love, and we're sharing it with the world. And so naturally, we're kind of like opening ourselves up to, you know, see some big successes, but also see some failures and maybe some rejection. So I'm curious, as a counselor, as someone who has studied mental health and psychology and a lot of the insight that goes into those industries and those fields, why do we as humans get so hung up on rejection? Like, why is that such a really big, scary thing for us as people?
Well, I think it's a great question, particularly when you think of what rejection tends to feel like. So if you think back to kind of early days, caveman, cavewoman, you're talking about rejection would have been a failure, right? We tend to feel like failures are like we messed up whenever we experience rejection. And way back when, if you were a cavewoman or a caveman, that's going to be whenever something life-threatening didn't go well, okay? Right. Guess what happens whenever something life-threatening doesn't go well? You're probably seriously injured or you're dead back in caveman days. Our brains and bodies have not really developed much past that point. And so I think one of the first places to start with is better understanding the ways that our minds are wired, Bonnie, is to actually feel like we need to be 100% successful. Because guess what? Mm-hmm. Thousands of years ago, it would have been one time you mess up and it's still the one time that you're dead. What that means, though, in rejection, when it comes to places where now our society has progressed, we've evolved, and now rejection is not life-threatening, or at least very rarely, fortunately, life-threatening, we will still experience that same level of doubt, of fear, and of fight, flight, freeze, even over rejections, though our bodies are no longer in mortal jeopardy. What I see is so key for that is actually recognizing, okay, why am I experiencing this? It's not because of anything that happened in the moment. And it doesn't even say much about me. It says that my brain and my body are feeling what my ancestors probably felt whenever they actually were in mortal danger. Mm. But our society's progressed so far beyond that. So I think that's one of the first things, is there is no one that is going to be free from rejection in today's society. We're all going to have numerous rejections. It is universal.
Wow. Okay. That just like blew my mind in the best way possible, because it helps not rationalize, but it helps explain why that's such a universal struggle that we all feel. Because I don't think that, like you said, there's one person who doesn't experience that fear or struggle with that instance of rejection when it happens. Like, I'm thinking about the people who I look up to in the industry, or I'm thinking about, you know, for those who are tuning in, like the people that you look up to, like every single person has encountered some kind of rejection, some kind of failure, and it doesn't have to have so much power over us, especially when we think about the context of our modern times, of our situations, of how we're experiencing that kind of rejection or failure now. Okay, so that was fascinating. I loved it, but kind of like building on what you were just talking about, Josh. Okay, so we've put it in perspective. Our rejection in this day and age probably, thankfully, isn't going to be the question of life or death. It's going to be maybe something where like our pride gets hurt a bit, or maybe like our ability to earn more money is threatened or something like that. But realistically, as entrepreneurs, our work is loaded with a lot of big wins, but also some failures. Are we ever going to get used to, like, I don't know, a client turning down a proposal or a business partner passing up on an offer or something like that? Like, okay, so we know it's not going to be the end of the world, but are we ever going to get used to it, or is it always going to sting so much?
Well, in terms of stinging, I think it's actually a way of showing that you are human and that you're in touch with your emotions when things do hurt. We as therapists tend to have a bit of a saying that you are 0% in control of your initial emotion to a stimuli. So whenever you get that rejection email on a proposal that you really worked and put your heart and soul into, I think that shows that you're actually in touch with your emotions and that you're human when it does sting. Now, beyond that initial interaction, there's going to be a very much more reasonable way for you to better process your emotions, whether it's a little bit of grief or a little bit of reminding yourself of your identity, that you are not your activity and your worth is not based in that one person's rejection. There are ways to make yourself kind of bounce back more effectively and more confidently. That's kind of the idea of Brené Brown's Rising Stronger thesis that I think is so powerful and is a must read for any entrepreneur. But in terms of actually feeling that initial reaction, I think it's more validation and embracing the fact that it's okay that this hurts. This shows that you are still unjaded and that you are still a whole high-functioning individual.
That makes so much sense. And I really respect that that's such a healthy way to look at it, of like, okay, giving yourself the grace to experience that initial emotional response before feeling like you have to make a decision or figure out a way out of it, or, you know, kind of what the next step is. That's something that I love to encourage my coaching students with, of just letting them know, like, okay, if something happens, give yourself the space to feel the feelings, but then give yourself the opportunity of removing the emotion from the actual logic decision-making approach. Because I think that so often it's easy for us, especially as entrepreneurs, especially like freelancers, if you're a service provider, let's say that you're a designer or a photographer and you worked on a proposal and you sent it over to a potential client who you really wanted to work with, and then they come back and they say, no, like, I'm sorry, it's not a good fit. You're way out of my budget. It's really easy for us to like take that personally. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to feel those feelings, but then we have to kind of take a step back and look at it more analytically and assess, okay, what they actually said was that my prices were too high. So I'm not the problem. If we're really looking for a problem, it was that this client was not in alignment with what I charge. And that's okay, because that is not, that does not need to be a reflection on your worth, which if we kind of think back to what we talked about in our last conversation about identity and things like that, that can help you make a really healthy distinction between how someone responds to you, which might come through in the form of rejection, but how that actually doesn't bear any weight or any significance on the truth of the matter. And the truth is that you, your worth, your identity are not going to be tied to your successes or your failures. So just a little like pep talk there, a little good reminder to keep, to keep in mind. So all that to say, Josh, how can we cultivate resilience to handle rejection? I know that you referenced Brené Brown, who is just a personal favorite of mine. I have gleaned so much wisdom and so much encouragement from her books over the years, but when you think about what it looks like to walk through practical ways to cultivate some resilience so that we can pick ourselves back up when we do handle rejection, where do we start, or what does that look like?
Well, I think one of the first places to start is exactly what you were saying so well earlier, is actually recognizing that it is a value statement, not on you, but on the value that you place into your work. For many of us, that looks like, okay, I feel like I need to bat 1,000. I need to be perfect. I need to have no rejection. When in reality, being able to actually start by logging your successes is one of the best preventative ways to avoid the rejection, and the best proactive ways to better develop resilience in yourself. So I actually have, because one of the hardest things as a therapist is marketing. You get zero training on it. And it's one of those areas that yet every single person in private practice needs to learn of, how do you show people, hey, I can be a resource to you as you walk through that difficult time in your life. So I actually have a list of people that I contact, whether it's doctors, pastors, other mental health professionals, and I keep track of how they each went. The reason why that's so important is because otherwise, you're going to become despondent. It's going to be so tempting to despair. One of the things that John Gottman, who is probably one of my favorite marriage counselors, discovered is that we do not log our failures accurately. We do not log rejection accurately at all. In fact, you would think that we would be more good, means that we feel positive about ourselves, than bad, more successes than failures. Actually, Bonnie, we need 5 times the number of successes than our failures in order to feel confident, like we're actually achieving things, like we are being successful. 5 times for every 1 mistake, for every 1 rejection letter, whatever the case may be. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's so important to actually be able to look back, because your brain rationally thinks I'm just failing all the time. When in reality, I guarantee you listeners out there, you're probably having many more successes and wins than you recognize. But if you don't record it, if you don't keep a track of it, you will not be able to recall it in the moment when you get that initial sting, like we talked about.
That's so fascinating. And also so, I don't know what the right word is. I'm trying to think. I feel like it's so telling in a sense of, all of a sudden, it the way that we're so hard on ourselves, the reason why we are so down on ourselves so often, it makes sense. It's making sense that, okay, like we are looking at our failures disproportionately so versus our successes or those wins. So that is such a big learning opportunity for me, for, I know so many people who maybe have not heard much about that insight before. But Josh, like one thing that you were saying was keeping a record of those wins, so that when we're faced with a rejection instance or a failure, we can kind of touch base with that. And something that came to mind is just like a simple practice of keeping a gratitude journal. I've seen several, even you can just, you know, get them at a bookstore, on Amazon, where it's just a simple practice of taking, you know, like 5 minutes a day and jotting down good things that happened, whether that's in your business or your personal life. I've even seen some planners, like weekly agendas, monthly planners, things like that, that have a space on the daily view or weekly view where you get to record some of those wins. And I really love that because it's such an accessible and easy way for us to be making a record of things that have gone well and things that we are proud of and things that we do want to celebrate, so that when the inevitable rejection conversations come around or the failures show up, we're not really turning up the volume so heavily and so loudly on those things, which kind of makes me think about something else that I want to talk to you about. It's this whole idea of negative self-talk, right? Because when it comes to experiencing rejection or the fear of failure or any other like sneaky self-doubt that likes to pop up in our brains, especially when we least expect it, I feel like it often can appear as a negative self-talk loop. Like we just start saying these things, horrible things usually to ourselves, that reflect back on how we view ourselves or how we view our capability, all of the things. So how do we recognize when that's happening to us? I feel like that's something that usually we just like default into that and we slip into it so easily that all of a sudden we look up and we're like, oh yeah, like I've just been like talking a bunch of crap to myself for the past like 20 minutes and we don't even realize it. So how can we start to pay attention to that and maybe cut it out?
Well, I really like the what would you say to a friend approach, which is the idea of whenever you notice that your internal dialogue is starting to say things that you would never say to a friend. So you're not working hard enough. You're lazy. You're a jerk. You're a failure. You'll never amount to anything. Whatever are kind of your internal thought loops that you're like, oh my goodness, like that would never come out of my mouth to someone else. In fact, oftentimes we would say things to ourselves, Bonnie, that we wouldn't say to our worst enemy. And yet that's one of the areas that it's so easy for us to kind of buy what we're saying to ourselves, what our internal monologue says. And so being able to actually have that kind of internal test of, am I starting to be harsher on me than I would to anyone that I would sit down for dinner or for coffee with? That's the first sign to me that someone needs to better be able to regulate and better begin to not just be defend themselves, but actually be proactive in affirming their identity. That was one of the reasons why I loved us being able to talk earlier about identity is, let's not just say I'm good enough, though that helps, but let's be able to say, this is actually what I'm gifted at. This is who I'm designed to be. It's so powerful, Bonnie, when I see my clients, and I know you see yours as well, that maybe are better able to walk through, better having an identity and a security in themselves to where they know, okay, this internal thoughts, they're just thoughts. They're just comments. They have no meaning and they have no basis in reality.
That's so true. Something that I have seen, especially my sweet industry friends or even like my group coaching students who are ones on the Enneagram wrestle with, is that inner critic. I feel like ones, oftentimes, if you're familiar with the Enneagram, you know that they have this really loud voice inside that is really influencing their decisions and the way that they kind of view the way that they move through the world. But I think that we all have an inner critic within us. It's just sometimes, you know, for the sweet ones who are tuning in, maybe it's louder in your mind, but that's okay. I think that what can be a loud voice that points out areas where you didn't do it perfectly can be an opportunity to take control of that volume knob and turn it down, maybe hit the mute button, and give yourself the grace of looking at, Josh, just like you were saying, like the strengths, the skills, the gifts that come with being a one or being any type in the Enneagram or not even knowing what your Enneagram type is, because that's just one of the many like personality inventories out there. But I think that there's a lot of beautiful possibility that can come when we give ourselves the grace to be honest with ourselves when we are in those negative self-talk loops. Yeah. So, okay, you were just saying that really starting to focus more on our identity can be a helpful way to snap out of that negative self-talk loop. Is that one of the best ways you would recommend to break those internal monologues, dialogues, or are there other steps you think we could be taking too?
Yeah, I think that actually being able to embrace your identity and knowing what you're good at, what your gifts are, and where they're not can be so freeing. So there's absolutely no one on the planet that is good at everything. It just does not exist. And anyone that believes that is probably needing a little bit of mental health counseling, because I guarantee you they are setting a bar so high that they are just shaming themselves and hurting themselves by trying to jump over it. So one of the things that you can do is starting to identify the areas that you're gifted at. For example, I'm very good at a second attempt on something. When it comes to a second time to present material, a second time to be able to meet with a couple, a second time to be able to work with a crisis situation, my ability to better foresee and better know how to care for someone skyrockets. Guess what? I learned that after a whole lot of first attempts where I was not giving myself a lot of grace, like you mentioned. And so for me, then that first attempt, I've been able to reframe into, okay, I'm a calm person in the storm. I'm very good at being able to walk with people through hard times. And if it's something new, I'm going to have to give myself grace to enjoy this as a fun learning experience. Instead of evaluating myself by the standard that I would like to have, that kind of one, like you mentioned on the Enneagram, but better being able to see, you know what, I'm going to come in humble. I'm going to come in learning from this new experience, because I know the next time it's going to go a lot better. And it actually, funny, ironically enough, helped me personally be able to actually do a lot better even in the first attempts.
That's so fascinating. So when we think about continually cultivating this practice, because I kind of think of it as like, okay, if we're committed to figuring out how we can be kinder to ourselves and how we can start to battle these things like negative self-talk and find a way to be gentler to ourselves when we're navigating rejection, I kind of think of that as like a practice, right? Like something that you're cultivating on a regular basis, because in my experience as a human, it takes that kind of dedication and that kind of commitment. Is that pretty accurate in what you've seen with your own journey and your own clients?
Absolutely. I think it's something that you have to have in your system and have to have in your normal routine. Otherwise, it's not going to be the priority. There's always a way to be distracted by something else. So for example, I'll answer my version, then ask you, Bonnie, the same question. But I ask my clients, what are the things that you gain life from that are part of your normal routine? What are the things that you enjoy? For me, that's being able to read a good book, being able to spend time with my kids at bedtime, being able to read their little stories, and also being outdoors. Those are things that are life-giving to me. And if they're not in my routine regularly, I know I'm starting to go down a path that can lead towards burnout, depression, all kinds of that negative self-talk starting to win. What do you find are those things in your life that are restorative, particularly after times of potential rejection?
That's such a good question. I think that when I focus on asking my own coaching clients, and even my branding clients, sometimes this comes up in our conversations about really kind of what their big picture definition of growth looks like, those kind of goals they're wanting to hit. It always comes down to me, this idea of what your unique definition of success is. So that's usually not something that's defined by a certain amount of money that you made or how many people were on your team or the number of clients that you booked in a year, but it usually all boils down to, like, when we strip away all of the fancy metrics and, you know, external things, it boils down to stuff like you were saying, Josh, of like the quality of life that you're living and the depth of the relationships you're cultivating and the happiness and the joy and the fulfillment that you are experiencing. So for me, like, when I think about how to, you know, really be kind to myself when I'm coming out the other end of rejection, like, oftentimes that's something where I'm very purposely slowing down. I'm not launching myself straight into another big pitch or another big project or something that is, you know, kind of like action oriented in that way. Instead, I give myself space to really recenter on what I know to be true about myself. And so that is a lot of like intentional time with the people that I love. Like, that's a lot of alone time. Like, my little introverted heart just like generates so much joy and so much peace from being outside on our back patio with a good book and a cup of coffee, or just soaking up the sunshine, or having a really good conversation with a friend that I haven't spoken to in a while about how life is actually going. And I think that those sweet, simple, quieter experiences, those aren't like the kind of big flashy things that we usually talk about or that we see people, you know, like posting about on their blogs or talking about on their Instagram stories. But those are the kinds of moments that, to me, like, make up a, well, I don't know what a good word for this is. That's kind of what boils down to, in my mind, of a truly successful life. Those kinds of moments and experiences that really bring so much fulfillment. And Josh, like you said, they're life-giving. And I think that if we're able to keep ourselves grounded and keep ourselves close to those life-giving experiences, the ones that kind of sap our energy and kind of like throw a knock at us emotionally and kind of chink away at the armor around our hearts, like rejection and things like that, they don't have such a big impact when we are filling up our cups with the good stuff instead. So I really love that is something that you focus on cultivating on a regular basis with your own life, Josh. I think that's the best way to go about it.
Yeah, it's been hugely impactful in my own life. And I think one of the things that helps the most is making sure that you are continuing to make that a process. This isn't something where just taking a long vacation is going to be nearly as effective as the little joys, the little pleasures, mm-hmm. the little meaningful activities that you do once a day, once a week, whatever your rhythm is. And in fact, my supervisor, as I started my internship process, used to tell me, Josh, if you want to prevent burnout, make sure you have one small joy a day, one medium-sized joy a week, and one big joy a month. And that idea of just kind of those rhythms where there's never long, dry periods of just hardness, difficulty, overstress, like you mentioned, better being able to take those moments to recenter and recalibrate, I think are so helpful. And what you do with that time is you remind yourself of goodness, of truth, of beauty. And that's one of the most powerful things I've seen from other men and women who have been successful in their own careers and their own lives for years, is the fact that they know how to be present in the moment. They know how to receive joy and how to recover during these moments of just bliss.
That's such good advice. So would you say that if we focus on kind of cultivating that sort of routine where we're building these joys, these kind of recurring sort of like stable, dependable joys into our lives on a regular basis, that we can start to kind of slowly turn down the volume on that internal negative self-talk?
Yes, I would say that that's one of the best things you can do in order to actually turn the volume down. And that's one of the areas where then it's not you trying to fight thoughts with thoughts. That can be very helpful in many ways, and I'm a big fan of that. That's kind of the idea of cognitive behavioral therapy or identity therapy, where you're actually pulling back out, like we talked about last podcast episode, the identity and who you are to combat the negative self-talk. But the other thing is actually your body. You are a whole being, body, mind, and soul. And so being able to actually take care of all three elements, like you mentioned, being able to have a good conversation and hear how things are really going, being able to enjoy something on the front porch, those things are engaging all three different aspects of your being.
That is so true. I never really thought about it that way. But if, you know, you kind of think about any aspect of life, like if like mentally you're wrestling with something, you've got like a big project that's looming overhead, or you're feeling stressed about something, or you just had a really hard conversation with like a member of your team or with a client. If you get up, if you walk away from your computer and go outside for a walk or go to the gym and get in a quick workout or, you know, take your dog for a stroll around the block, like I find that that has such a real power and how you're kind of like resetting and clearing your brain a bit. So I totally can see what you're talking about with that combination, that connection between mind, body, and soul, and how filling up different cups in those areas allows you to pour out back into yourself, which I think is kind of a beautiful image if you think about it. But what kind of encouragement would you share to someone who is tuning in today and they are feeling like they are ready to start this journey of healing that self-talk loop that's going in their mind? Maybe they're ready to infuse it with more kindness, more grace, and kind of break up with that more damaging negative self-talk mantra. What kind of encouragement would you share to that person today to kind of get them on their merry way?
Welcome to beginning to feel free. I think for many of us, the negative self-talk, we feel so downtrodden, but it's become the new normal. It's become what we're used to, Bonnie. And that's one of the areas that you don't realize the burden you carry. Like that old story, Pilgrim's Progress, of the man, I believe his name was Christian, and he carried a boulder, just this massive kind of backpack type weight on his shoulders. That's the image that so often comes to me whenever I think of negative self-talk, particularly pervasive negative self-talk, where it's become the new normal. For those of you that are sitting out there and you're saying, I want to be free of this, it's going to be so incredible. You don't have the time not to do this task because you're running at 20% less, 30% less energy, vitality, just life in you. And so just like anyone carrying too many weights or too much in their backpack, you're going to feel lighter. You're going to feel free. You're actually going to find yourself all of a sudden having new thoughts and opportunities and new creativities that before were being so distracted and weighed down by the negative self-talk. So it is worth the effort. It is worth the journey. And it is a lot easier than I think most people think it will be to start tasting that freedom.
That is such beautiful encouragement. And to those who are tuning in today, I hope that you're feeling encouraged. I hope that you're feeling like this is well within your grasp and that navigating rejection well, diffusing those negative moments of self-talk in your mind as an entrepreneur and also just as a human, that is achievable for you. And that is a practice that you have the permission to cultivate within your own life day by day. I would really encourage you to spend some time thinking through some of the great questions and tools that Josh shared today. As always, I'm going to be sharing all of these wonderful notes in the show notes for today's episode. So just head over to brandstrategypodcast.com, click on today's episode, and any resources mentioned will be shared there. And I'd encourage you to hang out with us next time. We're going to be building on this conversation about rejection, negative self-talk. As you've kind of seen at this point, we've slowly been building on, you know, things like identity, then, you know, focusing more on our internal relationship with ourselves and hard experiences, to then focusing on how we can pour this energy externally, outward. And so next time, we're going to be talking about how to set clear boundaries and handle difficult clients as an entrepreneur, which is a big pain point for so many of us. But it's going to be a great action-based conversation where you're going to walk away feeling like you have the tools in your emotional toolkit, so to speak, to set better boundaries so that you can experience more of the emotional and mental clarity and wholeness that you want, and that you have some tools also in your tool belt to handle those difficult clients. So Josh, I'm excited. I feel like this conversation today, as always, was so encouraging, so insightful, but I also feel like next time that's going to be a great conversation to dive into.
Thanks, Bonnie. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you so much for joining me today, friend. Before you go, I would be so grateful to receive your feedback on the Brand Strategy Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode or the podcast in general has helped you grow your brand, I'd really appreciate it if you left us a review in iTunes. Your positive reviews enable the Brand Strategy Podcast to continue to grow and reach like-minded creatives just like you. Plus, I'll be randomly selecting a handful of lucky reviewers each month to receive a little thank you surprise for me in the mail. Thank you for all your support and encouragement as together we pursue building brands with purpose and intention. Until next time, I'm cheering you on from Waco.